Welcome to the AquariMax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 23, released January 12th, 2010.
Buonasera tutti quanti!
That means good evening, everybody! Even if you're listening to this in the morning.
Yeah, so because we're recording it in the evening, so you have to deal with that. Okay.
So, first item of business today is a comment from Brad.
Yep. We'd like to thank Brad for his email, and he had a question, well, he had a comment first about his Anubias plant, which he got after listening to our podcast on Anubias, and he said that he really liked the green color of the plant, that it was beautiful, and that it was growing for him, so I'm glad that's working out for him. He also had a question about dwarf puffers. He listened to the podcast on those fish and was wondering if dwarf puffers expanded when they were feeling threatened in the same manner that saltwater puffer fish are known to do. And the answer is yes, but in the 5 years or so of my experience with puffers, I think I've only seen it once, and it was one of my younger puffers just puffed up for no reason that I could tell. I mean, it wasn't being threatened. I wasn't sticking a net in the tank or anything. I was just looking in there, saw it swimming along in an unperturbed fashion, and suddenly, whoop, it swelled up and then almost as quickly deflated. So, yes, they do it, but it doesn't happen very often because, like I said, I'd only seen it once. And just as a word of warning for those of you who might think, oh, that would be neat to see my dwarf puffer do that, or you know, get a dwarf puffer so I can see that happen. It's generally not a good idea to try to encourage it. Not that you were doing that, Brad. I'm not accusing you of that. But just to let you know, especially if you take them out of the water in a net, it's possible for them to inhale air, and then it's a lot harder for them to expel that air than it would be if they had done that with water, and so it can be dangerous. And once again, Brad was not attempting to do that in any way, shape, or form, and I'm not accusing him of doing so, just so you know. But if anybody thought of that, then please don't, because it's not a good idea. So, there you go. Thanks a lot, Brad, for your comments and questions, and hope to hear from you again.
And the next thing that we're going to talk about is the three-eyed wonder, the Triops.
Yes. And I guess technically it's not really three eyes.
Oh, come on.
But it's something like an eye. It's a photosensitive organ.
They Might Be Giants has a really cool song that says Triops has three eyes. That's, so I can say that they have three eyes.
And the name does mean three eyes. That's what Triops means. There are various genera, or that's the plural of genus, of Triops. So you can call them all tadpole shrimp, or you can call them Triops, even though there are some groups that don't belong to that genus, Triops. But the one that's most commonly kept in the United States is Triops longicaudatus, which means long-tailed, that last part. So it's a three-eyed long-tailed creature. But there are many other species.
It's a three-eyed long-tailed creepy little freaky. Sorry. Okay, continue.
Okay. And so there are all different kinds of those available nowadays. It used to be that in the U.S. you could basically get that one species, Triops longicaudatus, but now you can get cancriformis, which is common in Europe. You can get, I think it's australiensis from Australia. They're all different species that you can get, and subspecies and so on. But in general, that's the one you're most likely to find if you buy a kit in the U.S.
Okay.
And it is a living fossil. They have fossil remains of Triops that are millions and millions of years old, even predating dinosaurs, that have changed virtually not at all in all that time. So apparently it's a very successful body plan and survival strategy. And they're really amazing creatures. Just one little factoid about them. I did the math once on this, and it is kind of rough, but as a rough illustration of how quickly they grow from the time they hatch, if you were to take a Triops egg and increase it to the size of a chicken egg, and then you were to multiply the rate of growth, or keep the same rate of growth, and with those proportions, within 21 days, that chicken egg-sized creature would be the size of a great white shark. 21 days. So they're very fast
crazy.
Growers. Yeah, they're pretty amazing. And there are some other interesting facts that we will discuss as we proceed.
Okay, great. Well, tell us who should keep these.
Well, they're great for a lot of things. If you're interested at all in invertebrates, these are a great and unusual invertebrate to keep. They're great for kids. Kids love the various appeals of triops, their fast growth, their unusual appearance, the way they swim, just they're good for science projects. Our kids are doing science projects on triops this year, so that's kind of what gave us the idea to do one on triops. We've kept triops many times in the past, but we just figured this would be a good time to do a podcast since we're hatching some out again. And they're great for seasonal pets. We'll talk about how they have a very quick rate of growth and a very short lifespan. So if they're a pet that you want to say once or twice a year, oh, let's hatch some triops and keep them for a couple of months, and then we won't have to worry about it after that, then, you know, that's great too.
Vacation pets.
Yeah, just about.
Okay. So what kind of setup do triops need?
Well, I think the most important thing to think about is the fact that to raise triops successfully, you need to think of it in terms of two separate setups. You need a hatching tank, and then you can have a grow-out or maintenance tank that are actually quite different. If you don't, you will have a harder time succeeding, because the conditions that triops need at hatching time and shortly thereafter are very different from the conditions they need as adults. A hatching tank should be small, because triops need to be able to find food, and so they need a certain food density, but you also need to maintain the water quality. And so in order to maintain the density of the food as well as decent water quality, you need to have a fairly small size. You also need to maintain the hatching tank at a higher heat than you would a normal adult tank, and it also needs to be quite well lit. You need a lot of illumination, and those are the main conditions there. In a grow-out or maintenance tank, or one that combines both, it can be quite a bit larger. The adults are much more adept at finding food than the young are. It doesn't need to be kept quite as warm, although, you know, fairly warm. It is more for your benefit in viewing the triops than it is for the adults. It's not as much as a necessity for hatching. You know, it is a necessity for hatching, but it's not so much a necessity for the adults. And a sandy substrate, or you know, a fine gravel substrate, something like that, is beneficial both for propagating triops, if you want more triops, and also as a something for the adults to dig in.
Okay. What's their aggression level?
Well, they will eat anything smaller than they are that they can catch, and they will also eat their own species, even individuals of approximately the same size. Anything larger than they are, or much faster than they are, that is not really in any danger, but they will eat anything that stays still long enough that they can manage. So smaller crustaceans are lunch, you know, smaller triops are very often lunch. They're not, you know, going to be able to chase down fast fish or anything like that, but fish eggs they'd eat, and so on.
Triops eat triops world.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, what about materials that we need? Any other materials?
Well, yeah, if you're going to, for a hatching container, you're going to need something that'll hold maybe half a quart to a quart of water. That's, you know, ballpark figure there. You'll need some way of heating it, and one of the most popular ways to heat it is a light fixture, maybe like a gooseneck lamp with an incandescent bulb in it. And for the larger tank, you know, just a normal tank setup with fine gravel, or sand is better even on the bottom, with a normal filter and everything is fine, although you may have some provision for covering the filter intake with a, you know, open cell foam sponge or something like that. And you'll need some distilled or RO water, at the very least very soft water of some sort, water with very low mineral content, to be able to hatch the eggs, which of course you can go to the supermarket and buy a gallon of distilled water for less than a dollar, You can buy RO water, especially if it's with your own container, for even less than that, usually less than half of that. And if you have your own RO unit, of course, then it's only a couple of cents.
Then we're jealous.
Yeah, yeah. That's something I want to get eventually. I don't have one at the moment.
Okay, what are good...
Or an aquarium, gift shop, places like that often have them. Toy stores will carry them, or big box stores, you know, things like that. Carry them because they're carrying the dried eggs. You don't need to get live tryops. In fact, it would be kind of pointless because by the time you buy a live tryops, it would be half dead just by virtue of its age. So you invariably buy them as eggs. You can also buy them on the internet. There are many, many sites that sell them, including Aquabid. You know, private breeders will sell them, but you can buy them from the companies and from tryops too. There are all kinds of places to buy them, and they're very, really pretty reasonable. You can get a starter kit, which is really all you need, for probably less than $6 these days online.
Okay, that's pretty reasonable, considering all the fun you get out of it.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay, let's talk about feeding.
Feeding, okay. Well, if you're feeding tryops, you'll start out with the hatchlings. Well, we really ought to go back and talk a little bit more about that, I think.
Okay.
Maybe later. Because we didn't really talk about the size of the container for adults. I would say if you go to somewhere around a 5 to 10 gallon aquarium, you can keep several adults in there. It's not uncommon for the adults to, you know, eat each other if they're not getting enough food, and sometimes even if they are. But probably want a container around 10 gallons if you want to have several adults living in there. If you just want one, it's okay to maybe, you know, half a gallon to a gallon container would be okay. And one thing you should think about when we're talking about water parameters, the eggs do need distilled or RO water to hatch, or something, you know, really soft water with not much many minerals in it. But the adults really need cycled water, cycled aquarium water, which can have the minerals in it. In fact, if you try to keep them in distilled water for their lifespan, they will die unless you're adding minerals of some form to the water. So think about that. That's kind of unusual in aquariums to have a species that has such differing requirements is in terms of water parameters from young to adult. I mean, there are some that are pickier as fry. For example, it's most killifish need very soft water to hatch. It's kind of the same thing as killifish, but there's not a lot of other fish that I can think of with such differing needs. But think about that as you raise those. So now back to feeding, as you were saying. Hatchlings need very small food. Infusoria is a good way to feed them. And most kits come with a little sachet, like a tea bag, with some sort of organic matter in it that has been cultured. And so as soon as you add it to water, the cysts and so on of various protozoa life, various types of microbes and things, begin to become active in the water column, and those provide food for tryops. If you're doing it yourself, you know, with just your own eggs that you've hatched, you're going to have to figure out some other way to provide that infusoria for them. You can make an infusoria culture with, you know, one of the various recipes. It's pretty easy. You pour some boiling distilled water on some lettuce or something like that, and let it sit in a sunny window for a few days before you hatch your tryops. Something like that will work. If you're using some substrate from an older culture, there are probably enough cysts and so on in the sand that you're using to be able to create an infusoria culture just by virtue of adding the distilled water when you're ready to hatch your tryops. Something like that. But at any rate, they're going to need something like that to eat. very early on. They begin eating soon after hatching, and if they don't get enough to eat, that's kind of the critical period for triops. They'll die pretty quickly, either by being eaten by a hungrier sibling or just starving to death. That's, you're going to need to make sure you have that. Something that I've used with great success is microworms in very small amounts, but I add a few microworms when I notice the triops hatching, and they stay alive long enough in the water column that usually by the time the triops are ready to eat them, they're still alive, and then they finish them off pretty quickly if I just use very small amounts. But it helps provide that source of food that's easily available, small enough for them to eat right away, and they tend to cannibalize each other much less if I add microworms regularly when they're young. But as they're adults, they begin to eat any, you know, after about 3 days, they'll begin to eat just about any animal or vegetable material. A good staple food for them is sinking pellets of fish food pellets, of, you know, goldfish food works, shrimp pellets, anything like that, algae chips. As long as you make sure it's fairly small amounts that they can finish quickly, and that sinking works a lot better than floating, and pellets work better than flake.
Okay. Tell us about triops breeding.
Well, triops are unusual in that they have several different types of breeding modes. They do engage in sexual reproduction. In some populations, there are males and females. In other populations, there are only females, and they're parthenogenic, so they reproduce, producing clones of themselves. And then there are hermaphrodites that can be a male and a female in the same animal, which may mate with another hermaphrodite, or in some cases they may even self-fertilize. So they're pretty versatile that way, and apparently different geographical populations do that different ways. I've never had a problem. Almost every time I've hatched triops, there are some females that produce viable eggs, so I don't think it's a big deal. Basically, all you need to do is raise the triops to maturity, which might take a week and a half or 2 weeks, something like that. You'll notice after a while that there are little kind of patches at the edge of the carapace before the tail that are a different color from the body, and that's where the eggs are stored and then released from that area, and they're released repeatedly, and they produce, you know, they can produce hundreds of eggs during their lifetime. The best way to preserve those eggs is to have a substrate like fine gravel or sand on the base of the habitat, and as they dig around and look for food, they'll bury a lot of those eggs, and then you can collect the eggs by taking a scoop of that substrate and just drying it. You can let it air dry, or you can try to dry it a little bit faster, you know, with a little bit of gentle heat applied to it. I just usually let it air dry. And once it's dry, you can store it for a long time. I think the longest we've ever stored eggs and then hatched them again, which we could probably do it a lot longer, but we haven't waited longer, we've done it over a year, I think. And they hatch just fine after doing that. One thing you have to be careful of is that many times the substrate has a lot of dissolved minerals in it, because after, you know, a week of keeping the triops in this distilled water that you originally hatched them in, you begin adding food and materials to the water which provide minerals, but then also you gradually acclimate them to your tap water, of course dechlorinated and aged, but you acclimate them to that, and once you've done so, you know, they use those minerals to grow and so on. It's good for their exoskeleton, they need that. But that some of those minerals are going to be in that substrate. So the first few times I tried to hatch multi-generational triops from, you know, a single purchase, didn't work all that well for me until I realized sometimes the minerals, my tap water being fairly rich in minerals, need to be reduced. You need to cut down those minerals. So what I do now is add distilled water to, you know, a tablespoon or so of substrate from an older dry culture. Let it sit for maybe 24 hours. carefully pour most of it off, and then add another dose of distilled water. That reduces the minerals because they dissolve in that distilled water, and then I pour it off and then add new distilled water. Reducing those minerals allows the eggs that trigger that they need to hatch. They need those three things, basically. Low mineral content water, needs to be warm enough, and they need some bright light. And then they'll hatch. And it's also interesting to note that some eggs will not hatch on the first time that they receive all of those factors. It might take two or three times of getting all those things before they will hatch, and that's a survival characteristic. So, you know, if there's a rainstorm that happens to occur in the wild but doesn't last long enough, it dries up too fast, then the entire next generation is not destroyed. It makes them very resilient.
Okay. Is there any other troubleshooting things you want to talk about?
Well, one big problem, people wonder about why they don't hatch, and those three things, heat, which you can provide with a light bulb fairly close to the water, you know, an incandescent bulb, one of the few times that we actually need those in aquariums, incandescent bulbs. They're not getting enough light because light is actually a trigger. It's not just the heat from the bulb, it is light. It's a good thing. I often hatch them in a windowsill or near a windowsill, as well as that extra incandescent light. The natural light seems to help. And then the low mineral content water. Absolutely necessity has a trigger in my experience and in the experience of many others. Why aren't they surviving is another one. Critical period, those first 3 days, they need to get enough small food like infusoria, micorm, something like that. And then why do they eat each other? That's usually because there's not enough food, although some cannibalism will probably happen even if there is enough food. But I've raised, you know, a dozen triops and a couple of gallons of water without any real cannibalism, just by making sure they have enough food.
Okay, great. Have you had any other observations or things that you've tried you want to tell us?
Yeah, this last time I thought, well, heat, light, and low mineral content water, what would be a really easy way to provide all of those things? So what I did, I took a specimen container. It's an acrylic container, like the ones the pet store use. They hook it over the lip of the aquarium, and it's kind of a rectangular container that then they put the plastic bag inside it, add some water, and then they catch the fish and set them in there. You know, those containers that they move around inside the aquarium shop all the time. I have one of those, and so I said, why don't I put that on the inside of the aquarium? That way, the heater in the aquarium will keep it warm, the light over the aquarium will keep it well illuminated, and I can fill it with distilled water. It should work fine. So that's what we did this last time. We've done it in a variety of ways, but this time I just figured, oh, that would be a good way to try it. So we did, and it worked great. We have a tank with a 65-watt compact power fluorescent bulb on it for growing plants, aquarium plants, and it. I positioned it so it was right above this specimen container, which was inside the tank, and filled it with distilled water and a tablespoon or so of old triop substrate from over a year ago, and I poured the distilled water in, let it sit for about 24 hours, carefully not to pour off any of the little eggs, which are kind of about the size of a period in a, you know, a common reading font and kind of a peachy orange color. I was careful not to pour any of those off, then added more water, and within 24 hours of pouring in the new water, I had about 6 to 8 triops from this tablespoonful of substrate. And so I noticed this evening that at least another one had hatched too. So there are various ways you can do it. You can try suspending the gooseneck light bulb above it. You can try suspending it in a heated aquarium. You can try doing it in the summer in a windowsill when it's going to be warm anyway. A lot of ways to do it, but whatever way you try, triops are likely to be one of the more unusual pets that you've ever kept, and they don't live very long. A couple of months is a pretty respectable lifespan for a triops. And by the way, the plural and the singular are the same, triops, because it means three eyes, so it's not one triop, although that is in common usage nowadays. They don't live a long time, but they're a lot of fun, and once you buy some, you know, you have a supply for life if you follow the instructions that we just outlined. And be sure to check out our resources page. MyTriOps.com is a great one that helped get us started, and there are a lot of other great ones out there to help you in your quest to keep and culture the bizarre and fascinating TriOps.
Good night, folks.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit Aquarimax.com. For comments and/or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.